This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey there, welcome to More Than Potential, the podcast. On this show, we talk about mental health, well-being, and self-improvement from a Gen Z perspective. I'm your host, Faith. So today, we have a really special episode. I'm super excited because I have a few friends of mine who decided to come on the show and talk about this subject. I have a friend of mine from college. Her name is Kiara. She's 22 years old, living in Georgia. She recently completed her undergrad, and she's currently doing research about clinical psych programs in her region. She's really grateful to be employed and secretly an artist. She loves music, dancing, cooking, all the artistic things. She's navigating her 20s with as much patience and grace as she can. She's trying to carve out her path and enjoy her life in the process. Everybody, put your virtual hands together for my friend Kiara.
Hello, thank you for inviting me. Happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here. Do you have anything you want to say to the people? Like, how can they find you?
I don't do that anymore. But, you know, no, I don't.
No, we don't do that. We're good. We're good on that. Okay. Well, you know, thank you for coming on the show. You know, we actually met because I did an undergrad research project. And so she was one of the focus group participants. And she was very insightful. So I know that she's going to have a lot of interesting things to say. So my next guest is someone I also know from college, but we met completely differently. She was a resident assistant when we met. So her name is Brianna. She is a financial analyst at Wells Fargo Bank, where she underwrites loans to several large companies. So before this role, Brianna was serving in several positions, including auditing derivative markets at SunTrust. Wow, I really don't know what that means, y'all, but that sounds very impressive. She's very impressive, guys. She audits derivative markets at SunTrust, now Truist Bank, and financial planning at Hensler Financial. Brianna also operated a small house painting business during the summer of 2016, where she and her four employees generated over $25,000 in revenue in just 3 months. Most recently, she is working to launch a blog called Just an Analyst, a platform to help Gen Z and millennials build wealth holistically by focusing on their mental, physical, and spiritual growth. Every week, she will have posts focusing on financial planning, budgeting, building assets, and multiple sources of income, healthy eating, fitness, self-care, mental motivation, and spiritual awareness. You can follow her at Just an Analyst on Instagram for weekly tips and mental motivation. I'm going to clarify, at just underscore a underscore analyst. Remember the underscore. That's important. So like I mentioned earlier, Brianna and I went to the same school. We both went to Kennesaw State University, and Brianna graduated with the BA in finance, and she graduated with honors, y'all. Honors. She is a proud Sigma Epsilon chapter. She's a part of the Sigma Epsilon chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, and she serves as treasurer of this chapter. It's very, very big deal for her. In her free time, Brianna likes to read, write poetry, dance, and hang out with her friends. So, everybody, welcome the very accomplished Brianna.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here and happy to, you know, take time to talk with Faith and Kiara on this very important subject today. So, thank you.
Great. I'm really excited to have you guys on. You know, I think both of you are like super smart, and you have different smarts in different areas. So I think your experiences will be interesting, and I think there will be a lot to gain from your insight. So the topic today is Black women and dating and relationships. And I know this seems to be a very interesting subject for some, because there's always this perception that we're like inherently struggling and inherently like valued less on the dating market. So I thought it would be a good idea to let other Black women set the record straight and also provide some context about what's going on. So my first question, when you see a lot of like the social media posts about Black women struggling to date or find anyone, what is your response to that?
When I see the post, it kind of makes me cringe inside, because for one, I do have like a piece of me that relates to, you know, well, sometimes I do feel like it's hard for me to date. And I, for me, especially being a dark skinned, successful Black woman, I'm seen as intimidating because I'm not afraid to step to a man if they want to come at me sideways. So it makes it harder for me to date because I'm not willing to accept or settle a lot of the things that I think a lot of women are willing to settle for. But at the same time, I also think that, you know, well, why are we putting that stigma out there? Because there is good men out there. You have to be willing to find them. And also, I think a lot of people do not focus on the internal growth that needs to come with finding yourself before you settle with a man. So for me, I've been single for, you know, a couple of years at one point. And so that time I found a lot about myself that had I not worked on it beforehand, before I got into or the beginnings of a relationship that I'm currently into now, it would have been an issue and it would cause a rift in the relationship. So I definitely think that while there it can be warranted, there's a lot of assumptions and stigma that shouldn't be there when you see those posts, and that only adds fuel to the flame for me.
Yeah, I agree with that fully. Because social media is so prevalent, much more than it was when we were younger people, I think about like the younger Black girls that haven't even really had an opportunity to create any sort of like fantasy about how maybe they want to be in partnership with somebody in the future. And it's discouraging, fully. Also, to me, like, I'm still a young person, so it's like almost too, it's very much like one-sided. I totally feel like everybody has struggles with dating, like all types of people, all types of women, you know, and for it to be framed in this way where it's just us as usual out here struggling, like nobody want us, like we trying, like we overdo it because we know that nobody want to be with us, all that type of stuff, like it definitely infiltrates in a way that I think is painful and potentially harmful to us in the future. Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
You're right, it's so well spoken, y'all. So obviously, you're like, wow. But, you know, I think that, like, points were made all day long. One thing that Kiara said that resonated with me and it kind of triggered me a little bit was the fact that, like, you have to think about all the young Black girls who are growing up who haven't even really started dating yet because they're kids, and they're growing up seeing, like, all these articles and posts that are saying that they're supposed to be undesirable. And even if it doesn't actually fit in with what their lived experience is, because there's plenty of Black girls who are desired, almost to the point where it causes us harm, by the way. I think it's really weird to be like a young girl seeing all of this like misogyny specific to us and then having to reconcile the fact that that's not happening for them, or maybe it is. And then you're like, oh, well, is this what I have to look forward to? Is this like Black womanhood? Is Black womanhood constantly comparing my womanhood to other races of women, you know?
Yeah, I feel like especially like younger Black girls who are growing up in predominantly white or non-Black environments, it's like you're seeing this on the internet. And then oftentimes like that is kind of being affirmed like in your social situation. Like I know for a fact when I was younger, they were not the boys at my school in high school, middle school, they were not interested in Black girls, like let alone like Black looking Black girls, you know? So I do think it just like creates like very almost like traumatic conditions, like for somebody to potentially move forward and like be lovable or in love, you know?
And I also think, in addition to that, is that it also unfortunately starts in the home, because I have plenty of times where, you know, I'm sitting at a table and it's like, why don't you have a boyfriend yet? Especially the older I get and the more accomplished I get.
Yes.
Why don't you have a boyfriend yet? Oh, if you went to an HBCU, you'd have a boyfriend by now. And it's completely degrading to me in a sense, because it's like my accomplishments, I've accomplished so much in the short span of life that I've had so far. And the fact that we always come back to this, oh, well, I need a man to be complete. It's hurtful. And it, honestly, you begin to see yourself in that light unless you have you take the time to really break down what that means to you. And so because I've taken that time, I can clearly see that that is not, having a relationship is a compliment to my life, not a goal or something that I should strive for. It's a compliment. So if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I'm still me and I still have my own dreams and accomplishments. But it really does start in the home. And they see that in the home. They see that with their family. They see that with their friends. They see that in social media. So it's really, you know, like piling on here so that when they get to the age that they're ready to date, they have assumptions and expectations and values about themselves that may not necessarily be true, may not necessarily be correct. And they project that out into the world. And it's a cycle that keeps going over and over again. And at some point we need to break it. Truly, we do.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. What Brianna said, I agree.
Exactly.
Like, it's the fact that it's in the home for me. Like, a lot of the ways that we see our own desirability and the pressure that we feel to, like, live a certain kind of life on a certain kind of timeline, it really does come from sometimes, like, the people closest to us. I mean, when I think about how fortunate I am that my mom never really forced me to really, like, invest so much in partnership. And I think the reason why was because, and we could talk about this at a point where I think the reason why was because my mom's relationship was so tragic in how it, you know, started and ended. So, like, she already sees that maybe this overinvestment in romanticism is not necessarily the goal in life, and that you should have other things, like, lined up for you, you know? So you don't really want to spend too much time pressuring your kids into marrying and partnering at young ages when they may not be ready for that, or maybe they just don't care enough. Brianna, you seem like you're in a good place emotionally. So, like, you may want a partner, but you may not necessarily need one, you know? And you seem like you have your head on your shoulders and you know what you want.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that goes back to taking the time to figure out who you are. And I think a lot of people, not just women, but people, unfortunately, do not take the time to figure out who they are and what their core values are, what they're willing to compromise on, what they aren't willing to compromise on, and truly just take the time to be by yourself. There's so much you learn being by yourself, taking yourself out to dinner, treating yourself right. And because people haven't taken time to learn about that, they go into these relationships with a fucked up mentality. I'm sorry if I curse. I don't know if I should. They go into these relationships with a messed up mentality, and they expect their partner to bring the happiness that should come from internally. Mm-hmm. And so even though I've had that in my family, unfortunately, you know, taking the time to really getting to know myself has really been able to overcome that stigma that has been placed on me. And now I'm confident enough to say that, no, you know, I don't have anyone right now, but, you know, I'm happy, I'm fine, and I'm successful. And I think my family is starting to see that it's not necessarily all about having this marriage or this partnership, because I'd rather be happy and alone than in a toxic relationship crying every night because somebody's doing me dirty and I don't want to be alone. So I choose to stay. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah. That's what I am. Like, for real. Like, I'm really reveling in, like, that space of, like, uncomfortability when it comes to being alone, because I have never been alone, really. Like, I've always been alone and also not at the exact same time, you know? And, like, now I'm, like, actually forcing myself to sit down and think and like write things down. And like, I hate to say it this way, but like not being so driven by the idea of like being wanted by men. I date men, so being wanted by men, like that was a really overwhelming sort of aspect of who I was for a long time. And it's like, again, like it's very uncomfortable to, because I know I'm beautiful, but like that sort of like needing the validation thing has always been present. And I do think it is because of like, my past experiences and things like this. But yeah, that's where I'm at. I feel you on the, you have to figure it out on your own. Like you can't let somebody tell you what's good for you. Like, you know what's good for you.
So one thing I think about a lot is, because what I'm getting from both of you is that you're really settling into yourself and coming into your own. And it's really interesting to hear that from like younger women, because y'all can't be older than 25, honestly.
Yeah, I'm 22.
Yeah, like y'all are relatively young. So, it makes me think like this stereotype about Black women being independent, like in some ways it's true, but it's not because of what people think. I think because, you're a Black woman, you have to be more resilient. And I think that because of the structural issues that we face, you really do kind of had to dig down deep and find something at your core that makes you stronger. And not in a sense like you can't be hurt, but more of that quiet sense of like knowing yourself and knowing what you want out of life. And I think we do get to that point at a much earlier age due to factors like outside of our control. But I don't want to romanticize those factors either because it can be like traumatic and harmful depending on how it happens for you. So what are your responses to this in terms of that like stereotype of us being independent and so self-assured and so confident,
And so for me, I think it firstly it has a historical base. I mean to take it back all the way, like we were in the fields right next to the men. So I feel like in our race, we have always been seen as equals. Because there wasn't this break where, oh, I had to be delicate, I had to be a mistress of the house or whatnot. Like, no, we were working. We were working, and that has carried through from mother to child to next generation and through on out. And because of that, we naturally, I think, innately have a strength that just displays itself. And then that's further built on by the fact that, well, you have the separation issues that come with being Black. Where the man doesn't stay, and so now the mother has to be the provider, and the provider in a monetary financial space, and a provider as a mother and caretaker. So we naturally just have this innate strength that I think displays, and I can't really explain why it displays itself the way it does, but we were never we've always felt that we needed to be equals to at least men, and to other races as well. And so I do think it's true that we are self-sufficient, we're independent, and we're more willing to take the risk of being independent than other races as well. I don't know if I explained that right, but that's kind of where I feel like it stems from. And because of those historical facts, I do think it's true.
Yeah, I agree with you fully. Like physically, like when it comes to money and like being like doing labor, like us having to be like units of labor, that's always been a thing for us. We never really had the opportunity to be quote unquote delicate, quote unquote feminine. Like that's just not who we were allowed to be for a very, very long time, and even still. And yeah, I agree completely. It totally comes from a necessity, like especially when you consider the way people, like the hierarchy that exists, right? It's the white supremacist one. We're like at the literal bottom. Like like people quote unquote above us can look at us and be like, oh, well, I'm better than them. But like, we just have to be like our best selves because we have like the awareness constantly that people are expecting us to be basically everything that we're not, you know? And then if we consider like controlling images, like the way in which like those have fully, like in the media and stuff, like those things, these ideas that we're like aggressive and we're independent to a fault and all these other things have totally been like fed to us. And I do think that we reflect that as well because of what we've been trained to know. And yeah, it's like you're in myself, like I'm constantly working against like what I think I'm supposed to be doing versus what I want to be doing, how I truly am on the inside, like how I'm imbued by the universe or whatever, God, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, I agree completely. It comes from history and just the manipulation around Black womanhood that's always existed.
And for me, I also think it's not only what we have been told, but what we haven't been told. And what I mean by that is that to other races, whether they're white, European, Asian, whatever have you, they were always taught that, you know, you take care of the house. Men is the provider. You take care of the house. Unfortunately, a lot of times it's like, I don't want to hear you. I should see you, not hear you. Mm-hmm. And all these other things that put them on a step below the man in that regard, where I feel like at least in my experience, I have never been told that. Right. I've been told that, you know, respect the man, but he is your equal. You are working on the same playing field because we have the same oppressions. Like, we are dealing with oppressions of that are hitting us constantly every single day. And we're trying to break out of that. And to break out of that, we can't be delicate. We can't be weak. We can't be non-self-sufficient. We have to be independent, be self-sufficient in order to break out of those molds, break out of that oppression and get to the next level. And so I also think that also plays a part into why Black women tend to be more aggressive in the boardroom or more aggressive in any type of situation, because we've always had to be. I mean, it was either eat or get eaten for us. We've never had the option of just chilling back and not doing anything. Mm-hmm. We've always had to do something.
It's interesting. I have a very different experience when it comes to, like, I was brought up by Baptist Christian folk very much in the church. I was raised to view myself potentially one day as someone's submissive wife. So like, there are some things that I feel are oppressive to a degree when it comes to being a woman, in the sense of how I'm supposed to, honestly, like, it feels like relinquishing who I am completely to like serve a man potentially. And that's something that I am working to grow out of. But like, I'm not gonna lie to you, there's an aspect of me that has romanticized that idea. And like, I do sometimes imagine like in this realm, like there are so many different possibilities and that could still be who I am, you know? And I agree with you though, because like, I was raised to be that way, and yet it was women who were taking care of me, like who were doing the things that they weren't supposed to be doing, essentially. Like, there were no husbands involved to submit to. Do you know what I mean? So, and it was confusing to me because it's like, okay, so I'm supposed, if a man comes in the house, I'm supposed to make his plate, but there's no man in the house. Like, all of you are doing all these things. That doesn't make any sense, you know? Like, my cousins and stuff would come over, and like my older aunts and stuff, like they would serve them. And it's like, why are you doing that? Like, you made the food, they don't pay your bills. Like, I don't understand like why this is happening, but it's just like a system of thought. So that was always like very confusing for me as well, because I didn't know how to make these two ideas like make any sense, like be cohesive.
Let me add on to this, because you said something that like sparked a thought in me that I'm like, people may not know this. So when Rihanna was talking about more of like the assertiveness of Black women and how like we may have to, in some instances, play this game where you eat or you get eaten. And so we're perceived as more assertive, but largely because the world is more hostile to us than it is to others. So we really do have to be on the defense. But then one thing that Kiara brought up is that there is a certain level of domestic life that I think that America has been trained to not see. Like when you think about it, a lot of Americans don't know what domestic Black life is like. They're not shown it. They're shown like crazy stuff that happens in urban communities. And there are Black people who live there. Their stories are valid, but Black suburban life is never shown. Like Black people doing regular Black things in middle-class households, what that actually looks like. You know, when I think about historically how Black people have lived their lives, most Americans cannot tell you. Even the people who were around at the time could not tell you what Black people were doing at the time. Like there was a whole period of American history where there were so many Black female housemakers. Mm-hmm. In the 40s and 50s, there were more Black men, women that were married than any other race. Black women were the most married race of women in the country because the men and the women created what I would call like a Black code of conduct, meaning the sort of respectability that was expected from the Black community at the time. So what Black people are shown now has no bearing on historically the lives we were able to create. We had our own mini societies within a society. You know, you had a white society, which was about, you know, conservatism and conformity. And you had a mirror image in the Black community, but it was never shown. It was never respected. People didn't see it. It was never showcased. And so it's like this whole part of Black female domestic life where you had Black female homemakers, Black women in the church, Black women, in different spheres. There was a whole period of American history, by the way, where Black women actually petitioned politicians to get things done in their communities. And you know what? A key part of the civil rights movement was Black female homemakers. Oh, yes. There were so many of them that they were able to petition and able to get their husbands to not spend money in stores because the women were in charge of the pocketbook. The women were managing the homes. So when we think about like what Black female womanhood is and like the power that we have, we only see it in this very specific lens, like Black women independent boss babes. We don't see like the Black women who are homemakers, who have more domestic lives. And we don't even, when you are trained to not see Black women as human beings, you don't see the constant struggle that Black women have always had in this country with being domestic and wanting that domestic life that America is offering them, but understanding that there are some serious constraints with that. And that even operating within our society, within a society, that patriarchal bargain still wasn't quite working out because we were the highest married and our families were the most stable, but we were not happy.
Right.
So we're still on that trek to understand like what would actually make us happy.
True.
And you brought up a point that I was actually going to, not in the same sense, but actually a point I was going to bring up, Faith, is that because it's interesting to see how you were taught, Kiara, from your Southern Baptist perspective, you know, fix the men's plate and things like that. Whereas I was also raised Southern Baptist, but that was necessarily not taught to me. And so, and I'm not going to repeat what Faith said because she hit all the points, but there was a in the Black domestic household. And so that's what I saw. Personally, that's why I was like, we weren't teaching that the men were above, you know, the women, because the women were equal because they were handling things that the men were not handling in the household. And that's what I constantly saw in my personal experience with my great grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and all the other family members, because I come from a family where we stay married. Like we do 50 anniversary vow renewals regularly. So, you know, that seeing that silent power, if you will, that is held by the Black women in my family is what made me see that, you know, we're equals, because it may not be as prevalent as like, you know, a boss kicking his feet up running the Fortune 500 company, but there is a power there. It's just, yeah, it's a silent power. And that's honestly sometimes some of the best power that you can have.
Yeah.
So, no, great point, Faith. I completely agree there. And that's just my personal experience of what I've seen, and which is why I've always looked at men as my equal, and that you're not, they're just things you're not going to, we're not going to take, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a way to do it. Like, there's a way to let the man be the man, if you want to say it that way. But I'm still respected as the woman of this household. Mm-hmm. And that even more so fell on the men to make sure that I was respected as the woman of the household. So making sure nobody comes into this house and disrespects me. And to be honest, that is something that I look for in a man. Like, are you going to protect me? And if someone else is disrespecting me, are you going to step up? I do look for it. Didn't know I was looking for it until I actually found someone that would do it. So.
I feel that. That's real.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to pivot a little bit and talk about your own personal experiences with dating. A really controversial subject is definitely dating outside of your race. It's like the big thing now. Everyone's talking about it. There's like people trying to have courses and all crazy stuff is going on. So like
courses,
books, courses, movies. It's a burgeoning industry. Like Black women dating outside their race. Shocking.
I know, right?
It's the courses for me.
That's funny.
So do you guys have experience with this? What are your thoughts? What are you noticing?
I will say when I was much younger, the conditions in which I grew up made it so I was very much attracted to only white men. Like, I had no desire for Black men. I wasn't checking for them, honestly, because they weren't checking for me. But then when I went to college, I was like, oh, okay. Wait, like, I like this a little bit better. And then I was in a relationship for like a year and some months, and that was with a Black man, and I was like very happy for a long time. It ended kind of tragically. It's unfortunate. People are people, you know. But I will say at this time in my life, I can't really see, I don't really see that for myself, dating outside of my race. Not because I don't want to, literally just because, like, I can't really conceptualize it in my brain. I will say sometimes, like, you know, like on YouTube, they'll have like a couple videos, and like people very much are capitalizing on being in an interracial relationship. It makes me cringe so much sometimes when I see it, because it's framed in this way where it's like, I don't want to say that phrase, but you know that video of Tamara Mowry when she's like, they called me a white man's whore, like,
oh my
like,
goodness.
Yeah, that's she said it in the video, because like, that's just what that like immediately goes off of my brain. But it's purely the way that like, it's fetishized, like that Black woman being with anybody else, like, type of energy is just so, sometimes it feels so not pure. It feels, and by pure I mean like, I don't know the word, but it's just not natural, I guess. It feels sometimes like, back to like Black women's struggle in dating, especially with Black men thing, it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna make the choice to not date Black men. I'm gonna date everybody else but Black men. Whereas I feel like it could be more, okay, I'm open to everybody, you know, if it happens to be a white man that I fall in love with, or an Asian man that I fall in love with, or any other type of man or woman that I fall in love with. That's a beautiful thing. But I can't lie and say that it doesn't make me cringe sometimes, like the courses, the idea that there are courses for Black women to date outside of their race, that makes me want to gag just a little bit, only because I'm imagining maybe the kind of person who is looking for that. And I just feel like that's very unnecessary. I don't know. That doesn't have to be a thing, but people do dating courses, like how to do this, how to do that. Like they get coaches and things of this nature. So I guess it's not so different. I just have a bias, honestly.
Well, for me, and I'm talking strictly when it's in its purest form. So not like being inorganic or just, you know, trying to capitalize on a fetish, if you will, in its purest love, organic form. Love is love. Totally. If you want to date a white, Asian, Spanish, Italian man, go girl, you'll do you. I do think that part of dating outside of your race can stem from the fact that what we talked about earlier with, you know, there's a stigma that we're undesirable in our own community. So you look for love elsewhere. But, you know, for me, love is love. And so I have no issue with dating outside of my race. I've not dated. I mean, I have my situationships, but, you know, I'm looking at the person. For me, you know, it's what is in your mind? What do you bring to the table outside of your attractiveness and outside of your looks? And so I wouldn't be opposed to it if a white man that, you know, light my fire walked up and we had a conversation and wanted to pursue something, then I'd be open to that. Because to me, love is love in all forms. And so who am I to tell you who to love and why you love them? Because love is, for me, it's something that can't be explained. Like, why do you love somebody? Oh, well, they do this and well, they do that. But I mean, your best friend does this and does that too. What is that determining factor? And it's something that everyone feels, but nobody can accurately explain why this is, you know, quote unquote, the one for me versus anybody else. When naturally we all ask for the same stuff. Oh, someone to treat me nice, respect me, listen to me. And, you know, we have fun together and laugh. We pretty much all ask for the same stuff. But what is that determining factor? Nobody knows. We can't put a flame on it. And I think it's just something internal and natural. So, you know, if a black woman or anybody want to date outside of their race, do you. Just make sure it's real and don't be playing with folks out here. That's what I can't stand, is when you're like doing it inorganically or with malicious intent and you're playing with people's emotions, because ultimately that's a human being and you're going to hurt them. And that's when I get upset. Yeah. So,
I also kind of feel like, yikes, I lost it. I feel that, for me, I do think about like the social implications of it as well. Not necessarily like how people might view me and my non-Black partner in public, but just internally in the relationship. Like I have biases. Other races of people have biases, and anti-Blackness has been a thing for entirely too long. And sometimes I would rather, when I'm thinking about dating outside or opening myself up to non-Black men, I am thinking about that, about how I don't want to have to mitigate that potentially. And not that Black men aren't anti-Black sometimes, like colorism is real and like all these things can happen with any men that you're dating, any person that you're dating. But just, it's kind of scary to me. I will be 100% honest. It's just a little bit, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable, the idea of it sometimes. And not that I don't feel like another race of man like could handle me or not. That doesn't have a lot to do with it. It's more so like, I'm comfortable here. I like this. Again, like back to, it's hard for Black women to date. It is hard for Black women to date, but I don't want that to be the reason why I feel like it's necessary for me to step out of my comfort zone, if that makes any sense. Yeah, and that's fully where I'm coming from with that. I agree with you, Filippo. Like, love is love. I'm open in my heart, but like it's very much a mind over matter kind of thing. Like my brain takes charge when it comes to me Really being able to see myself like in a long-term situation with somebody who doesn't look like me, you know, like the thought of like potentially having children that, and I guess it's kind of egotistical that I want my kids to look like me, but it's like these types of things are things that I've envisioned for myself, you know. So it's difficult, and there's a lot of messaging also that I've fallen victim to, I guess, with the fact that Black women are supposed to be for Black men, you know. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say about that.
And I can see that. And so, I mean, if you would ask me, I mean, I have a preference towards Black men, and I think that's okay. I'm not discriminating against anybody else, because we all have our preferences. But you know, I would be open to dating other races. And to be honest, interracial couples have their own challenges, their own unique set of challenges that same race couples just do not have. There's the cultural gap that you have to overcome, the family gap that you have to overcome. And you know, you might learn some things about your family members that you weren't ready to learn when you
Exactly.
bring home somebody that don't look like everybody else at the table. The children gap, as you talked with before, what if my children doesn't look like me? And I think you would still love them regardless, but that is
Of
something to
course.
overcome. But also the talks that you would have to have, particularly when you were talking of mixed babies of Black and white, because they might see both sides of the fence, to be honest, because they might be white enough to, you know, experience some privilege, let's be real, and they might be Black enough to face some stigma and have that duality between siblings, because one might be light and one might be dark. And so how do we work through that, how do we work toward that? But you know, ultimately interracial couples, when it's pure, I think it's, you know, a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I also do feel like as we were talking about before, like Black women are very successful like across the board. And so I can imagine like Black women who want to be with people that are like them when it comes to like materials, like financially and things like this. I think it's important to consider that also, like to not live, like for example, you, Brianna, like you're a very successful woman. And unfortunately, the ways in which the world has operated has made it so that there are the population of Black men that are where you are, like in your life at this time, at this age, is just a little bit like you don't have like a big pool of options to choose from if you limit yourself to Black men or anybody else, you know? So like the purity of it, sometimes I do want it to be just about the love, but it does like have to take into account, like can you meet me where I'm at? You know? Like it's okay if you can't, but it's like if we're gonna be in partnership, I do think that's something to consider as well. And so that's why I would advocate for Black women to date outside as well, so that you don't feel like you're having to just limit yourself, I guess.
I definitely do think that people limit themselves by dating within their race, you know, and only dating within their race, to say that more accurately. Because, you know, there are people that can meet you where at, and not to say that, you know, there aren't successful Black men, because they
Of
are.
course, yeah, of course
I see you, brothers,
not. Yeah.
you know, that is something to say, is that you do limit yourself by only dating within your race, and that there's so many more people, more experiences, and so much more that someone, you know, can teach you by just opening your perspectives just a little bit. But you can go ahead, Faith.
Yeah, I wanted you to say what you have to say because I fundamentally disagree with some things, and it's really hard for me because as I grow, there is going to be some evolution in how I think, but, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about what people mean when they say, like, they love someone. Like, I'm very, very critical of, like, this idea of love in the system that we're in. It's not to say that you can't fall in love sincerely and truly, but what is the nature of that love? Like, and it's not just for interracial relationships too, like just in general, even within Black love, right? Like, what is that love that we're really after? Is it like a comfort feeling? Is it a sense of familiarity? And how does like power play into that? And as a Black woman, you know, I think what's the reason why it's so hard for me to date is not necessarily because I'm not attractive or desirable to different types of men, but it's more of the fact that I understand and I'm always so critical of like, what, why do you really love me? Mm. Like, is it because you think you can control me, you can dominate me? Is it because you feel like I'm dominating and so therefore you don't really have to work to try and earn me because you feel like I'm this firecracker so you can sit back and let me take the reins in the relationship? Like, as I date different types of men, I date their expectations as well. And so sometimes like what they expect from me as a woman, as a Black woman in this body, like what they interpret that love for me to mean and how they think they should express it. Like there are some guys who it's different types. So let's say, for instance, there's a guy I dated who was like a white guy. He was cool or whatever, but he was more laid back. I find like the white men who are actually interested in seeing Black women as more serious partners do tend to be more liberal, I guess, or progressive, I guess, in politics, right? So what I came across though was that this man was nice, but there was this element of the sense that, oh, you're this strong Black woman, like you endure so much in a society, but I was not feeling the romanticism that I thought I was supposed to feel. Like, why is this man not trying to earn me? Like, would you approach a white woman in the same way that you approached me? Like, would you be trying to go on half effort dates where we schedule it like the day of or the day right before? Would you have brought flowers? And maybe that's like a really toxic way to think. But when you look at the romanticism in society and who is seen as desirable and worthy of certain types of affection, I have to wonder, why is it that like when we talk about love for Black women, it only looks a certain way? I don't really see Black women being loved out loud very often, no matter what race they're with. And then I have to consider as well, like the political nature of that love. Like, are people loving out of spite? Are they choosing someone because they're told they can't love that person? Are they choosing someone because they're told no one else will love you, so you have to be with the Black man? No one else will understand you. No one else can make, you know, have sex with you the way I can. You know, I just have to think about the political nature of this, because I'm leaning towards, I need to leave the United States to experience liberation and love and be seen as something other than this highly complicated set of identities that people can't relate to. People can't touch. People can't really feel that humanness. I feel like America has gotten rid of the humanness of Black women to the point where we reduce ourselves to like objects of desire, of attention, commodities, and we're constantly commodifying ourselves. So I don't know. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm just highly critical of this. I don't even know if I can really feel love in this space because it's so contentious and it's hostile to my body, to my psyche, you know?
You said maybe this is a toxic way of thinking. I don't necessarily think it's a toxic way of thinking. I think it's what you have experienced being, you know, digested and processed by your mind and your body and how you truly view, you know, love and romanticism. And so for me, you know, I have to remember that I come from a family where I do think I've seen love in its purest form. And I think I've seen toxic love. And I think I've seen all types of love. The people that have stayed married probably shouldn't have, but they do. And the ones that truly do love each other. And so taking that lens, for me, it's all about communication and vulnerability. That's where I find my romanticism and love piece. And so for someone that I'm currently dating, you know, we had a talk the other day where it was like, well, I would like to go on a date. And he was like, well, I understand, you know, I've been working, so I apologize for, you know, canceling our dates and whatnot. And I had to explain to him, like, why I felt like this need, that I needed to be loved out loud, as you said, and not be loved in an apartment or just in the bedroom. And so I think for me, I expect certain things, but I'm also willing to communicate that and have a conversation. And through those conversations and that communication and being able to be vulnerable is where I find my love piece. And for me, because it's really hard for me to be vulnerable with people. I'm a type of person that'll clam up and be like, I'm fine, when I know I'm not fine. And for me to be vulnerable with you, you enter a space where I'm comfortable. And I've always said that when I date men, they're not competing against other men out here. They're competing with my comfort zone, because I've gotten so comfortable with myself that if I don't want to be in your space, I will leave, because I know I'm much happier at home by myself 9 times out of 10. And so when I get into this comfort zone with you, I find that I can relax and I can be myself, and you become a part of my heart, my life, and that with all and everything that comes with that, and you become my family. And I think from there, a love grows. And I think love changes over time as well. You have that, what they call that newlywed love, that honeymoon love, where you just can't get enough of each other. But then it grows into this strong attachment love, if you will. But I don't even need to call it attachment love, because it'll grow into this, oh, we're good, but I ain't got to be all up on you. We can have separate bedrooms, separate, you know, man cave, women cave, go on a trip, you go on a trip, but I still love you and I'm still here for you. And I've seen that love too. And I've seen the, we don't been together so long that, you know, it's almost disrespectful how long we've been together. And we may have our issues, but I love you. I've seen people have full-blown arguments where just like, maybe they shouldn't be together. But then when the other person's in need, it doesn't matter. They're there. Like, perfect example, my grandparents may argue about the little stuff all the time and, you know, have the little nitpick fights, but he'll turn around and feed my grandmother because she's in the hospital and she can't really feed herself without hesitation. It's literally like that. And like, that's love in my eyes. And so maybe, you know, you and me see the world very differently on that regard, Faith, but I do think it exists, and I think it can exist within the United States. Sometimes relationships don't last, but if they do, I think it does turn into a beautiful, beautiful thing that truly does mean till death do us part, truly. And I feel like I've seen it, and that's what I aspire to, but I know it takes work. If you're willing to work through that, it turns into this beautiful, beautiful thing for me. I know that's very long-winded to say what I got to say, but I do feel passionately about it. So
that was very beautiful. I appreciated you acknowledging that the reason why we feel about love, if we believe it exists or not, is fully a product of our experiences. Again, like, I don't know who said this, but some woman said, I saw a video once, and she was like, love to me is like someone loving me love myself. And I feel like that's kind of where I sit with it currently, when I'm as I'm creating this definition of it, you know. And that is a little bit different than yours, Brianna, and that's probably a bit different than yours too, Faith, but it's I think it's so valuable that you brought in that aspect that, like, love is hard to explain because it's so many different things, you know? Like, I feel loved when somebody is willing to pick my nose for me, you know? Like, that's a loving, that's my love language. Like, I love, like, me feeling like I can be so pure and raw and dirty and ugly and, like, you just think I'm the best thing that ever existed. That's when I feel the most loved, you know? Versus somebody, maybe somebody might want, their love language might be somebody like helping them progress in life in different aspects, or let's say they're an artist, somebody who's willing to like help them create art and do these things, you know. But yeah, I think that's a really beautiful and also necessary point to make, that it looks different for everybody. Love is, I believe love is life, and life is incredibly complicated, so. Yeah.
Life is very complicated. Mm-hmm. But to clarify a point that I made earlier, I don't want people to think that, like, I don't think love exists or anything like that. I'm just incredibly critical of American life because when you know so many people who live abroad and you see the constructs that exist in the United States, it concerns me because of the way that we're trained to see each other. Like, we're trained to commodify each other. We're trained to look at each other as like a means to an end. And even the way like men and women view each other now, like, I'm sure you guys probably have opinions about how like there's like a gender war that happens in the Black community. And it's not just us, mind you. This is like much bigger than just a race issue. But in the Black community, there is this like contention between men and women over different issues. But I just think like the way that America has trained us to see each other, interact with each other, and it just feels so not human anymore. And especially in 2020, it's become so apparent to me, like there's such a lack of love, a lack of like life, and other people are seeing it too. And I'm trying not to cry, but I just feel so sad. It's so sad to see like this degradation of like what's supposed to be like a celebration of life and diversity, to see all of that kind of get eroded. It makes me feel like there is a chance for people to find love and meet and really connect, but there's so many barriers to get through to see each other's humanity past all the other constructs and the nonsense and the things that we're told about each other, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do think to a degree that's where faith comes in. Like faith, not you faith, but faith. Mm. Whatever that means to you. Because I agree with you completely. And like really, what allows me genuinely to give most people a chance is like, okay, there's a possibility. So something is looking over me, and something has heard me when I'm, you know, alone in my bed at night, and I'm like, oh, I want love, I want to be loved. There's something that's hearing me, and maybe this is a person who possibly can be that for me, you know. But I agree completely. It does make me emotional as well sometimes when I think too hard about it.
It's hard. That's noted. Thinking too hard.
You're not thinking too hard. I'm just saying when I sit and think about it for a long time.
But, and I think for me, well, I do think faith plays a role into it. And again, talking about higher faith versus like the faith on the podcast. but I also like to practice the giving of love. So, and as you guys were talking, I had thought about two things. One being, well, love is giving you the tools to hurt me and trusting you not to use them. And that's like a quote that I've seen. And I do think that has a lot of truth into it, because at its core, trust is a part of love. If I can't trust you, how the heck do I expect to love you? And it goes back to that piece where I was talking about, we're being vulnerable with somebody. When I'm vulnerable with you, I'm giving you the trigger points, the ugly, the dirty, that you can use truly if you want it to hurt me. And I'm trusting you not to. I'm trusting you to hold my vulnerability as precious as I hold it. And for me, that plays a huge part into how I build love. But the second thing is give what you would like to receive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a big proponent of giving love. And so even if this world, you know, the U.S. is, and it's true, it lacks a lot of love, especially with the stigma of social media and everything else hounding into and breaking into that, what love looks like and how do we express love. I give love every day, even if someone ticks me off and I feel like they don't deserve it. I give love because at the end of the day, where I'm a human trying to be a human to someone else. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I radiate love. And if you don't feel it, I'm going to make sure you figure out a way to feel it. And I feel like that has profound effects into what I get back. Just the kindness and love, because I love to exude that. I don't want to, just because you have a different agenda than me doesn't mean you're not human and that you don't have your own problems and that you don't have your own life. I have not been in your life, in your shoes for a second in time. So how could I fully and truly understand what you are feeling in this exact moment when you decide to be unkind to me? So I just give love back to you. And I feel like that radiates into the universe and ultimately it comes back and doesn't mean it comes back in a romanticized form. Sometimes it comes back in a friendship love or parental love or a pet love, if you will. And so, you know, when you give love, you can feel love. And then when you feel love, you give it. And so it's like a cycle. Mm-hmm. And I just try to keep the cycle going. So I'm a big proponent of also believing to give love. And not, you know, and not to say that, you know, I'm giving it only so it can return back to me. Give love freely. Give love with the purpose of I just want to give it. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately it will come back to you.
I think that's so wonderful. And I think it's really important. I believe the reason why you can do that and the reason why you feel that is because you have love for yourself, you know? Like you sat with yourself for a period of time and you were like, let me do this, let me figure me out, let me enjoy myself. And I think the reason why you can be that way and you are that way is because, again, like, you love yourself. And that's, I guess that, like, goes back to what we were saying in the very beginning as well. Like, you can't, whatever situation, like, you are in before you have, like, the blueprint of your humanity, like, laid out and, like, understood internally, it won't really be proper, you know? It won't feel the way that you want it to because you don't really know what it is, what it looks like, or how it should be, you know?
Yeah, and so, like, that self-love is so, 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 so important. I cannot stress it enough because, honestly, in a relationship, you are asking somebody to try to understand you. Mm-hmm. And if you can't understand yourself and you don't know yourself, mm-hmm. how in the world are you going to communicate to someone to understand you? Mm-hmm. So self-love and taking time for yourself is so important. It's so key. And I would stress it 10 times over because as I'm learning, as I, you know, am dating someone for real this time, and, you know, at the beginnings of what could be a beautiful relationship, there's so many times where I had to step back and be like, okay, what is this what I'm asking for? Fight my own internal demons when I had doubts about things and have a conversation with myself. So that way, if I needed to have a conversation with him, I already knew what I was ready to talk about with him versus trying to figure out in the moment, trying to have a conversation with him and then be like, oh, wait, nope, never mind. You know, and from there, I was able to have clear, concise communication with him about what I want, what I need as you know, Rihanna, and what he needs back and be able to truly listen. And that only because I took the time to figure out myself. So self-love is so, so important. I cannot stress enough. I will always advocate for it. So take yourself to dinner. This is a mini plug. Take yourself to dinner. Take yourself out. Treat yourself. If you can't treat yourself how you want to be treated by someone else, then how are you going to expect somebody else to treat you like that? You won't even treat yourself like that. So, you know, do all the little stuff that makes you happy. And it'll, you know, you come into a relationship knowing, well, if anything else, I can make myself happy. And it becomes, I feel like that's the foundation for a healthy relationship, is knowing yourself, being able to treat yourself, and knowing that this person can give you happiness, but they are not the source of your happiness. It's you.
Fully. Fully. And I think that's a wonderful way, again, to like mitigate being in like a marriage, for example, with somebody who you don't want to be with, you know, like you were saying earlier, like you've seen that. I've seen that too. That was how my parents were. My parents were incredibly toxic with one another. And they were together for a very long time solely because I existed and my little brother existed, you know. But my parents now are figuring out who they are, and their dynamic is so much better as like co-parenters, because they're like, it took them 50 years, but they're doing it now. They're doing the work, the shadow work and all these things, you know, so they can be who they're supposed to be or who they envision themselves as. I don't want to say higher self, but like they're the best, the purest form of who they were destined to be, I believe.
Thank both of you for coming on the show. You're both very intelligent. You both were very well spoken and gave some really good feedback. Like, Brianna, your points about being like optimistic in love and like searching for it, giving the love that you want to receive is like super important. Kiara, you're very wise. I forgot everything you said, but I just thought I was like,
So funny.
Every time you said something.
Girl, now she hit some points.
Thank you so much. Do you guys have any final words, any nuggets of advice for, you know, some of the younger Black girls who are listening to this podcast? Let's say they're not even 20, right? What would you say to them to encourage them?
Leave that man alone. Leave that man alone. Like, no, I'm so serious. Like, hone in. Like, if you're good at something, hone in on that skill. Like, what's meant for you will come to you. You're entirely too young to be out here worried about being single. It's fine. Being single is not a disease. It's actually a very beautiful thing. Embrace it. Like we said before, you have to love yourself. You really have to love yourself. You really have to love yourself. You have to love yourself. You don't have a choice.
I think Kiara said it best. I will only add to that is that there are some good men in their younger age. Me and Faith know a friend mutually that has been able to experience that, but know that, you know, if someone's willing to work with you, that counts for something. Okay. You know, so if they're willing to battle your ugly with you, you might want to keep them around. You know, just saying. And I don't even have to be in a boyfriend, girlfriend, non-binary, because we gotta represent the spectrum. But you know, even in a friendship, because I've had friends too that are willing to help me battle my ugly, and that is a friend that you can't pay. You it's priceless. You can't. They're worth their weight in gold. And so, you know, if you find somebody, friend or otherwise, that's willing to battle your ugliness with you, keep them around. But also learn to love yourself, because you don't know everything. I don't know everything, and I'm 23? I don't know everything. I don't claim to know everything, and I damn sure didn't know everything when I was 15, even if it feels like that. 15, 16, 17, 18, whatever. So, you know, just love yourself and and be open to learning.
I totally agree. My final thoughts on this is that if you're a young Black girl watching this, go find another young Black girl. Please go find another young Black girl that you can relate to, because I truly think when you love yourself, you love Black women. Like, you truly celebrate your own beauty. You celebrate the beauty in other Black girls just like you, and you won't feel alone. You know, a lot of the stuff you see in media can make you feel really alone, really confused. It might make you feel like maybe you're ugly or undesirable, or that the things that you're noticing and that are happening to you are only happening to you. It's not the case. Like, please find other smart Black girls like yourself to get to know, and you can share your experiences, and I promise you, you will not feel alone. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap. Thank you once again, guys, for doing this, for sharing your words of wisdom and your perspective. Like, your feelings and your perspective are all valid, and it's really important to share. So I hope you have a lovely day. Stay tuned for part 2.